are Vic Fellowship, and Vic stands for Vaccine Information Coalition. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network, the most listened to, commercial-free, and truth radio program in the world. My name is Renee, and my co-host slash husband, Gary Tunsky, will be joining us today. The title of our show is What in the Cell is Going On? And we're on every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern, which can be accessed live on the front page of prn.fm or later on the front page of our vacinfo.org website. We thank this radio station and now have any questions you may have answered on next week's show. The voicemail line is 862-800-6805, and just leave your name, your question, and let them know it's for our show. Our guest today is Dr. Judith Thompson, and she earned her doctorate from the National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. She co-authored a book called, or titled, The Unvaccinated Child, A Treatment Guide for Parents and Caregivers with Dr. Eli Camp, which became a bestseller within 1 month of being released. We're so excited to have you on our show today, and welcome, Dr. Judith.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a good opportunity to be here.
So tell us about your book. I'm so excited to receive it and read it.
Oh, I'm so glad you got it. So, yeah, you know, this was an effort that has been over a decade in the making, and it was really something that came forth from families who had, you know, initially just been coming very quietly into our offices and, you know, asking, what can I do to keep my child in good shape, you know, keep them healthy, if, you know, they get exposed to anything. And so we started out with some of the basics, and then, you know, more and more families kept coming saying, what can I do naturally to keep my child healthy? And so, you know, we realized we've got all this, just a whole entire box, basically, of all these tools that we would pick out and choose for families based on their children, what their needs are, and it was all safe, you know. So things like essential oils and herbs and homeopathic remedies and different little home therapies that parents could easily do at home, or vitamins and minerals. And so we realized we have so many parents that are coming to us into our offices, and what about all the parents that are throughout the country that also have these same questions but have nobody to go to? And so we put all of this information together in one book, and what was interesting during the research of it was that, you know, I'd been giving some talks just in the local community looking at what are the risks and the benefits of immunizing if parents decided to vaccinate their kids. And so, you know, I'd look at the statistics from the CDC, and we would see the numbers of kids that were affected and what types of treatments were being offered by conventional medical doctors. And a lot of times, if it was a bacterial infection, it was antibiotics. And if it was a viral infection, it was really nothing. There were no options. And here we were sitting with our toolbox of all these different remedies saying, wow, there's so much to do, and yet so many medical doctors, unfortunately, just don't have the same toolbox. And so we decided to put all this information in one place and give parents the recipes for how to make these natural remedies at home, and how to make different teas, and how to make vinegars and compresses and, you know, whatever's going to be supportive to the developing child's immune system, and give parents all the resources that they, you know, would want in terms of maybe other books to read or other sources, where to go to buy these things, because parents have been on their own really trying to put all this information together and not really sure of where to go and who to trust. And this is, you know, our cumulative information for, you know, with the two of us, over two decades worth of clinical experience and working with parents. So we're so excited to put this information together and realize that the need was really, really high. So we want as many parents and families to know about it. And so that was really kind of the process in the making of the book. And since then, it's been so great, just really well received with families across the country here. And then we realized there were people purchasing the book in other countries as well, because it wasn't just here that parents had questions. It was, you know, overseas. And we've been treating children with natural remedies basically for the history of humans up until we started, you know, giving vaccines in the last century. But there was information that doctors had that was common knowledge, and in some cases, families have this information as well. And, you know, it was used. It was grandmothers doing some of these therapies and getting their kids better. And that information was being lost, and we didn't want it to stay lost. We wanted it to still be available. And so there it is. Wow. You have it there at your fingertips.
That's amazing.
Did you have a hard time, Dr. Thompson, as far as educating the parents and educating the other side of the coin that were really not indoctrinated by medical or allopathic side? Did you have a tough time and any antagonism or any conflict as far as trying to teach them that there is another side of the coin with the home remedies, from ancient home remedies, and from even what your grandmother gave you or grandfather?
Yeah, you know, interesting. Yeah, we'd have, you know, parents with one parent on one side of the table and the other parent on the other side of the table. But when we started looking and really discussing how the immune system works and physiologically how the body is able to overcome illness, then parents became a lot more open to it. So you know, having a unified front for families makes a really big difference in terms of, you know, caring for the child. In terms of, if you're asking about healthcare practitioners, we've been talking to different groups of people, and you know, we talk to as many people as we can, and I don't think it's gotten into the hands of many medical doctors just yet. I mean, we would love for this to be a resource for medical doctors to have access to as well. There are many naturopathic doctors and chiropractors who have picked it up, but it hasn't made its way yet. And so we'll keep, you know, getting out there and talking to folks, because it gives everybody more tools to work with. You know, it's not just, it doesn't have to be just a small group of practitioners that can use this. You know, it can be nurses, it can be doctors, it can be, you know, anyone who's working with children. And, you know, we don't have to worry about interactions in many cases. You know, these are things that are stimulating to the immune system. There can be some cases where, you know, it really depends on the knowledge that the practitioner has in terms of their familiarity with herbs and what potential interactions there may be with potentially antibiotics, for example. But that would definitely require a little bit more training on the part of the doctor if it's someone who doesn't have much information to begin with on the mechanisms of the actions of herbs. But, you know, it is information that can be gained through different organizations that are starting to come up to speed to more of this kind of integrative care process.
Wonderful. And do you treat it, or do you help any parents that have already vaccinated their child, or are you just working with unvaccinated children?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point, because I work with kids who have been fully vaccinated, who've not been vaccinated, who, you know, have partial vaccination, because the issue isn't in the case of contagious illness, it isn't about whether or not the child was vaccinated, because we see from, you know, recent cases across, you know, in different states of the country here, that we've got kids who've been vaccinated and yet they still get these illnesses. And so this is really a way to be able to strengthen their immune system to help them get over these childhood illnesses that were so common just, you know, a couple of generations ago, but we tend not to see them quite as much today.
Do you ever get the demand from the parents that I want to do the vaccines and do natural at the same time? Kind of straddle the fence, and you know, I want echinacea, I want golden seal, I want astragalus, and at the same time, I want to listen to my pediatrician who told me to do the full vaccination schedules. Do you get any of that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do, and, you know, in those cases, we still can help. You know, we still can always support the immune system. We can always strengthen the immune system, and so there are parents who their sense of safety is doing complete vaccinations. And so if that's where a parent stands, then we say, okay, let's just see what else, what can we do? You know, vitamin D is still going to help. Echinacea is still going to help. And vitamin C is still going to help. So we work with parents that way. It just really is meeting those parents where they are, what's going to give them the most options to care for their child to the best of their ability. And so, you know, we're not turning away any parent at all. We really want to help everyone as much as we can. So this is something, these are, again, they're like time-tested remedies that have been used for generations. So we know that the developing child's ability to handle these herbs is there. The body recognizes herbs, recognizes, you know, plants, things that we have co-evolved with for centuries. So the body knows how to use these things, and many times they might even be things we find in food. So, you know, we might include something like turmeric, for example. We might put some turmeric powder in a little vegetable stew, or we might put, you know, honey and vinegar. We might put that maybe in, as like a little dressing on vegetables or something. So we have medicine that can be available just through normal day-to-day eating. You know, that age-old quote of let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, right?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So, do you, what I would love actually is for me to send the educate before you vaccinate cards to you.
Well,
you know, I don't know if you, huh?
Yeah, I'd love to have them.
Yeah. At least give that, because I don't know if you know my story, but I come as a victim. I lost my 4-year-old child, just being misinformed and not knowing the other side, not knowing that, knowing the facts about vaccines, period. I told her, Dad, I would never be a negligent mother and not vaccinate my child. But if I would have had our card that we've developed with the, our website on one side and the vaccine ingredients on the other side, you know, I tell people all the time in my presentation, I would have looked into it. I would have saw what was in the vaccinations, and I would have had a website to go to learn truth, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I would love to get you some of those to pass out.
Yeah. It's a really big piece because, you know, there are portions of our population, you know, children who we know can be more so affected by those ingredients. And, you know, if we start looking at this accumulation of toxins that children are exposed to today, just from things in the foods that they eat, if they're buying commercially bought foods that have food preservatives and food dyes and conditioners and all kinds of things that are, you know, not made in nature. And so these kids, their little livers have to process all these things. And then on top of that, if we're looking at, you know, where are they living? What are they breathing in? Do they live in cities? Are they breathing in, you know, car exhaust from buses and things that are, you know, cars that are out in the neighborhood? Are they, you know, living close to farms? Are they breathing in pesticides that are being sprayed on crops? You know, what are these kids being exposed to just on a day-to-day basis? And then if we start looking at those ingredients and vaccines, again, these are things that are synthetic, that are not natural to the body. And so now we've got an accumulation of things that these kids are being exposed to. So we've got to do everything that we can to keep them safe and keep them healthy and help their bodies continue to develop normally and be able to detoxify, you know, keep their livers in good strength. So just get rid of all of these things that they're being exposed to. So education is a really, really big piece for all parents and all practitioners, really.
Yes. And you practice, I think your bio said, in Vermont, correct?
Well, I'm actually in Florida. I'm licensed in Vermont.
Right.
But, yeah. Laws
Where are you seeing patients in Vermont?
I see my clients primarily in Florida, but I also work with families overseas. And so, I do a lot of, work via, telemedicine for families that are looking for some more support.
Wow. That's amazing.
Are you having trouble with the licensing in the state of Florida? Because as most people know that, the naturopathic, realm of treatment is not recognized in the state of Florida, so they're having a hard time using the licensing here. Are you having trouble with that at all?
Yeah. I mean, my license is really not helpful at all in Florida. So I do maintain a license, but it doesn't do me much good here. And so I work on a consultation basis with families, and this is part of the reason why, you know, we have to have a very open dialogue about what their medical doctor is going to be offering them and, you know, what kinds of things they can do on their own. And this is where the research really comes into play, because we've got to let them know that there's research available showing the effects from the natural remedies, you know, how supportive they can be and what kinds of outcomes we see from them. Because, you know, parents who are kind of, you know, unsure about which way to go, it's really about giving them peace of mind and showing them, you know, we've got data to support the use of these natural remedies. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that the whole country doesn't recognize naturopathic doctors, primarily because I believe that we're the best trained in terms of knowing these interactions that can happen between herbs and between medications, you know, pharmaceutical things, to be able to help navigate this process that the body's trying to go to in terms of detoxifying from the different ingredients and pharmaceutical drugs, but then at the same time trying to strengthen the immune system. So, you know, it's something that families have to work through, and so it'd be so helpful if we could do that in a more open way in states, you know, where currently naturopathic doctors aren't recognized.
Yeah. Well, the cards are really good plant seeders. I tell people, plant the seed and God will grow the seed, because it'll give them a direction to start researching instead of just blindly trust in their pediatrician like I did, you know?
Yeah.
So I would love if you could just, you know, anybody that you see that comes and they have either, you know, they're considering it and or have already even, you know, chosen to give a couple, just say, hey, just take some time. And it kind of takes the pressure off of you.
Yeah. Oh, I would love it. You know, I love having resources to give parents, because I have parents basically sending me messages from all over the country and sometimes from other countries as well. And they want to know and they don't know. And they're, you know, having their discussions with their pediatricians and they're saying, you know, we want to do some more research. We want to find out for ourselves before we get started, you know, or maybe the child might have gotten, their set of vaccines at 2 months, but then the parents are just saying, you know what, we just want to know more. And they need resources, you know, they need to be able to go and, if they're going to choose to vaccinate or choose not to vaccinate, then they need to be really confident in their decisions, because unfortunately the medical establishment today is very hostile to parents who are choosing not to vaccinate. And it's, you know, I believe it's our medical right to do what we feel is best for our bodies. Right.
Yeah. And the drug companies are getting desperate. I mean, you know, the FDA just approved that Vasilix, that 6-in-1. 6-in-1 vaccines are given babies at 6 weeks of age. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's just something that is absolutely confusing to the immune system. So, you know, it's not something that we're exposed to in a natural way. It just, you know, out in nature, kids are not exposed through a puncture wound to six different strains of a virus. It just doesn't happen. And so the immune system doesn't know what to do with that.
That's right. And now the vaccines have nanolace in them, some of them. So that literally shuts the immune system down. So they're literally, you know, working in total contradiction of our self-healing, doctor, like a broken arm or a cut in the finger.
So these are the pieces that parents are concerned about, and they want to know more, and that, you know, they're wanting to make educated decisions. That is something that I've seen happen more so, and that's because of the parents, unfortunately, you know, like yourself. I mean, now you have an angel that's working beside you, right, to help give you the strength to keep going out there and keep talking to parents, because, you know, it's unfortunate that the parents who've had these bad outcomes with their children, they're the ones who have brought this conversation to light and who have said, you know what, this happened to me, and get the information, get the education that you need before you start making decisions that can affect your child for a lifetime. You know?
Yeah, and that's why we kind of set the website up from a victim's perspective. My friend Linda, who does our website, is also has two vaccine-injured children. And when she does it, and we actually put on the front page, because I said to her, Linda, let's start off the website when somebody goes there, you know, how when we were misinformed, when we, you know, before we knew truth, what would we want to, you know, what would we wanted to see? And it's medical doctors. We want valid people, you know, people that back then was credible to us to say, you know, that there was a problem with vaccination. So we literally on the front page have just the credible, you know, nurses and doctors and, you know, the credible stuff. And then that leads them into the educate page, which is more my presentation, my husband's presentation. You know, so we lead them into the other stuff later, but it's uncompromised. I mean, because, you know, everywhere in the public, all you hear is vaccines are safe and effective and they save the world and just lie after lie after lie when you learn truth. And we feel that we have no choice but to give them an avenue like myself would have loved at that time to see all the information that's out there, and especially now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I'm involved in different groups on Facebook, for example, and I see the questions that parents have, and I see, you know, some of these parents who come in who are very much in favor of, you know, complete vaccinations. And then as they go through and they read about, you know, some of the research, they listen to what some of the parents have gone through, and they start looking, you know, for themselves, looking at the ingredients of these different vaccinations. And then they stop, you know, and they say, oh, maybe this is something that I need to look into further before I continue down this path. Or, you know, they start to pay attention. They start to see what the possible outcomes can be from the decisions that they make.
Yeah. So, you have a question, Gary?
Yeah. You being a naturopath that works with the pediatrics doctor, do you ever run into some major neurological disorders, damage done by the vaccines, and knowing that it is the vaccines and nothing else? Like neurological, autism,
seizures,
epilepsy.
Unfortunately, I've seen these cases, and, you know, it was from families who completely trusted what their doctor was telling them. And I went through the vaccination. I had one woman who, she went through the whole range of them, and it was one of those things where her child was developing normally, and at 1 year of age, after those next sets of vaccines, noticed a complete change, and then noticed continual regression in her child's health. And she noticed that with her first child, but she thought it was just something that happened to that first child. She had a second child and went through the whole thing, and again, had a completely similar reaction, not to as strong of a degree, but still another, ended up with a second child who was autistic. By the time her third child was born, she chose not to do any vaccinations anymore after that, because she just wasn't clear what it was, at what point this happened. But, you know, she did mention to me that she noticed it after the child was a year old.
Okay. Yeah. I just got called last night. I just spoke to a lady, a grandmother whose grandchild at 5 months of age got the vaccines and started seizures. And then the baby's 6 months of age now, and she's asking, what can we do to help, you know? And that's why I was really excited to possibly have Dr. Eli, or maybe you can help too. What are some solutions for seizures, and what can we do to stop the seizures of these babies? Of having encephalitis, brain swelling.
Yeah, gosh, that's one of the toughest things to work with. And so, you know, we've got to see what's going on. Is it something that's related to a fever? Is it, you know, something that's just kind of, we see these febrile seizures, for example, in children. And it could be something that just happens once, you know, and it would be something where maybe it's just happening for a few minutes and then it resolves and then it goes away. But if it's something that continues to progress, you know, or is something that is lasting for longer than 15 minutes or is happening throughout the day at different intervals, then we've got to start looking at, you know, how do we support normal brain function? And one of the things we have seen is that the essential fatty acids are really helpful to stabilize the brain, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've got to work with things like fish oils are really helpful. And that's really kind of my first line approach working there. But then we also start working on basically supporting the liver in detoxification, because if this was because of an ingredient in something that these kids had, then we've got to get that out of their system. You know, we've got to get the body to metabolize it and get it out. So, you know, I'd start looking at how do we, you know, how are we going to help the liver do its job? So sometimes even doing something as simple as rubbing some castor oil over the liver can help to break down some of the inflammation and help the liver do its job in terms of, again, normal detoxification out of the body. So these are things that we like to do to just continue to get that normal process going. And even things like probiotics. So this is one of those things where it's part of the normal makeup of the gastrointestinal system, which is highly involved in normal immune function. So we want to make sure that the child has every possible resource to go through normal functioning, you know, and break things down to stabilize the body and the brain. The one thing I wouldn't ever suggest.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I would just say I would never suggest putting a child with like a febrile seizure in like an icy cold bath. Sometimes that parents think that that might help, and it actually can make things worse. So I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I heard. I kind of after you had agreed to do the show with the Dr. Eli that you wrote the book with, I had looked into one of her videos where she was saying some herb. I think it was a kelp or something for seizures. Do you know anything about that?
Which herb was it?
It was some type of a kelp, I thought she said. It was an herb. It was an herb that she said was helping seizures in children. And I didn't know exactly what that
may have been something she's used in her clinical practice, because that's mm-hmm. not one that I've tried. I mean, okay. I would work with things like ashwagandha, which is really helpful. Just mm-hmm. because what we're looking at is stabilizing these rapid signalings that are going on. And so we really want to help to just slow down these rapid cell-to-cell communication that's happening. So I would work with ashwagandha to help to just get the brain to start slowing down, and GABA could even be another amino acid that's used to help slow down and basically it's an inhibitory neurotransmitter, which helps to slow down that brain functioning and get it back to normal.
Have you tried any of the cannabinoids, the CBD products that fill up the cannabinoid receptors in the brain?
It's interesting because I've had a lot of people mentioning it to me, a lot of practitioners, and I've seen research on it. But the parents who I've brought it up to, I think there's still a lot of stigma around the use of it. And so I haven't had parents who've been willing to try it, but yet I find that the research is pretty supportive of it, as well as, you know, the parents who have used it. You know, I saw a case of a young girl. She was, I believe, 15 years old, and she was testifying at the U.S. Supreme Court, or her mother was, that it was the most helpful thing that she had been using for her child. So, you know, we've got some people saying it's working really well, and practitioners who are saying as well, but I personally haven't had any parents who've been willing to work with it. Not yet.
Yeah, it's a sacred plant. I did a whole docuseries on it that was amazing, showing, did you see the sacred plant, the docuseries?
Mm-mm. No,
oh, wow,
haven't.
Yeah. John Malenka came out with it, and he, it was just amazing. The first series of the docuseries was how the families that had the money making businesses way back when, they literally created two Mexican names, Mary and Juan, and they came up with the name marijuana, and they put it as a class one drug with crack cocaine because it was undercutting their money-making business.
It was a smear campaign.
It was a smear campaign. So they showed the whole history and everything of how they even came to illegalize cannabis, mm-hmm. the sacred plant. And then they showed many testimonies. Even two girls they followed the whole entire docuseries who had cancer, and one of them had brain cancer, and she completely did the program with the cannabis, the whole thing. And then at the very end of the show, one of them survived. She did not survive because after she had, you know, learned everything, she chose to allow her family to convince her to do radiation on the brain. And yeah. when they did the autopsy, she had no tumors. The cannabis had eliminated the tumors in the brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've seen lots of cases like this, and I've also spoken to people who've told me that they did have cancer and they were doing well just using CBD. You know, it's a lot of people with personal experiences, and again, the research that some of the people involved in the industry have been doing and coming across really positive results. And so I do think that there's still, unfortunately, a lot of stigma behind the use of the plant. And so, you know, some people are willing to try it, others not so much. So, you know, we're still, I think, working through that with people's ideas about things, because these long-term ideas, these things that have been planted in people are pretty persistent, you know, like using natural remedies to care for things like measles, you know. And it just makes me think of, I don't know if you saw there was an old Brady Bunch episode that had been aired, and one of the kids was measles, right? And it wasn't a big deal. Was not a big deal, and it just, you know, the kids got it and then they got over it. But today, it's, you know, if we look at the news, everything is you know, this can potentially cause your child to die, you know, and it's big, right. Big media news, and I think we're putting the emphasis in the wrong area.
Yeah, fear-based for sure. And I show in my presentation how all these diseases were coming down because of better sanitation and nutrition way before the introduction of the vaccinations. And even in my daughter's case, I mean, her pediatrician, I remember one round of vaccinations, I had canceled the appointment because she was under the weather or whatever it was. And the next week I took her in, and the pediatrician literally made me feel like completely negligent, like she could have died, like scared me. She said she could have died in this week. Like, you know, without the vaccines, these babies can't even live, is how she made me feel, you know. So it's totally fear-based to get us to, you know, poison our baby's bloodstream and, you know, think that we're creating immunity. You know, the body knows what to do, like I said, like a broken arm or a cut in the finger. And the only thing that needs to be done, like you said, is supporting the immune system to make it stronger to be exposed to all the other bombardments to the cells and not be affected by it.
Right. And so, you know, I've seen this being used by doctors over and over again. Unfortunately, there's just a very strong fear message that's being given to parents. And of course, parents are trying to make the best decisions they can. And there are, you know, medical doctors really believe that vaccines are the right way to go. They truly believe it in their heart of hearts. So they really feel like the parents are doing the wrong choice by choosing not to vaccinate. And that's not informed consent. You know, that's just putting strong fear into parents that are, currently, because of all of the kids who've been affected negatively, you know, parents are fearful one way or the other. You know, they're scared to vaccinate, they're scared not to vaccinate. So, you know, my issue is there's a lot of parents that are just kind of stuck in this middle place of not knowing what to do. And we've got to give them options. We've got to give them resources. We've got to give them choices. And they need to know that they have a lot of choices. They have a lot of resources. And most parents don't know that.
Yeah. And what I've learned is everything that we're told about them is a lie. Everything. I was even told by a nurse at one of my presentations when I showed the charts of the decline of the diseases. She said they show those charts in medical school, but only from the point where the vaccine was introduced and down. So they teach these doctors and nurses that the vaccines are what caused the decline in polio, for instance.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it's total misinformation. And that's why I encourage, you know, people to look at the website and get the other side of the coin so that you have all the information you have. Because I teach people that if you're uneducated, they'll intimidate you. But if you're educated, you'll intimidate them. because they don't know this stuff. The doctors don't even know what's in a vaccination. The pediatricians, if you ask any pediatrician, they don't even know what is in a vaccination.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They are trusting the pharmaceutical companies that the research they give them is correct and complete. So it's unfortunate. I mean, and even now what we're seeing are mutations of the vaccine-derived microorganisms. So like in the case of polio, we're seeing a lot of kids who are getting the vaccines, but the live virus has mutated, and so these kids are now getting a vaccine-derived polio. So, you know,
and also the whole premise behind vaccines is germ theory, and we all know that germs don't cause disease. I mean, if the germs cause disease, everyone would be sick and everyone would be dead, because there's trillions of them in your hand or in your blood, your intestinal tract, your eyes, your nose, your mouth. So there's a symbiotic relationship with the pathogens to the human body, and without germs we couldn't live. But see, that's not taught in med school.
They teach
Louis Pasteur's research on this germ causes that, that virus causes that, that fungal form causes that, and it's the inner condition of you upon exposure to the germ. It's not the germ, but they don't tell them that.
Exactly.
So the whole premise behind vaccines is wrong right there, the whole research. You can blow it out of the water in 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when we start looking at the terrain, you know, this is actually looking at the full milieu of what is present in the body. And we've got trillions of microorganisms living in and on our bodies, which help to maintain homeostasis for us and help to strengthen and develop our immune system. And so when we start to just focus in on one particular bacteria or virus, then we're really doing a disservice to the other trillions that are living, you know, harmoniously with us, right? But so that's taking a more global perspective. You know, when we start looking at health from just looking at this kind of microscopic version of it's just this one little itty-bitty bacteria that ended up causing you to die, well, you know, everybody, we could have 10 people exposed to that same bacteria, and not everybody would have the same effect. And why is that, you know? And really, that's based on the choices that that person has made in terms of what kinds of foods have they eaten? Are they under a lot of stress? Are they exercising? Is there, you know, are their detoxification systems working well? What's happening in this person's life? Are they getting outdoors? Are they, you know, are they seeing some sunshine? Are they, you know, spending time in nature and exposed to clean air? All of these things are part of what is going to lead towards a person or a child either having better health or worse health. And, you know, I've seen cases of kids who are eating things like cheese doodles as a snack and I don't even know, all these different, you know, blue things and purple things. I don't even know these different names of these candies. And this is what, you know, their parents are saying, well, you know what, they don't want to eat any vegetables and they don't want to eat chicken, or they don't want to eat the whatever is put in front of them, you know, anything that's healthy. And so they just let their kids eat these things. Well, I've seen kids as young as 9 years old having to get their appendix out because of a ruptured appendix because of such poor nutrition, you know, year after year, day in, day out. And that doesn't have to be the case. You know, we shouldn't be seeing kids that need to have an appendix removed. It's really we as parents need to be taking better care of our kids. We need to, you know, be stern with them and say, you know what, you're not going to have that bag full of Cheetos or you know, whatever they're wanting. Right.
Yeah, the body needs appendixes. The body needs your tonsils. <Cold water. laughs> The organs weren't created with extra body parts.
Exactly. And so that's where, you know, and of course, after decades of removing these body parts, we'll see the research and you know, we find out, oh, wow, well, the appendix actually is full of white blood cells that help support our immune system. Well, wow, you know, that wasn't the mainstream thought for all the time that we were removing those organs. And now we see, oh, yeah, tonsils also, that's our first line defense. for anything that's getting, you know, our throat is going to be exposed to, well, we've got our tonsils right there helping with immune function. And so removing these organs then really is removing kind of your, it's like getting rid of a whole entire army of troops that we have on board in our own homes, you know, internally. And so then we create more problems, and we've got to support those kids even more, you know, and then those kids who grow up into adults need even more immune support because they don't have these organs that are there to support them and keep them healthy.
That's right. And I tell people that I, in my presentation, that I did my own clinical study because for 2 years, my son Corey was 20 months younger than my first child, Casey. And I chose not to vaccinate him, of course, because I had learned before she passed away at four, before her second birthday even, I started taking her to all the specialists. And anyway, long short, I saw for 2 years a fully vaccinated immune system compared to a fully unvaccinated immune system, Judith. And there is no comparison. And I'm sure you can validate that.
I keep seeing it over and over. And, you know, the parents who they're, you know, I've seen this kind of developing in my time, you know, since I graduated from medical school, and, you know, seeing these parents who initially were so scared, and they were the only ones who chose not to vaccinate. And they were really scared to make that decision, but they felt so strong and they felt so right about that decision. And they said, I'm just not going to do it, you know. And so I would say, okay, well, you know, I'll support your decision, and we'll just stay on top of your child, and we'll see how your child continues to develop, and we'll see how we can keep them in good shape. And I didn't see these kids again because they never got
they're healthy. They were healthy. Well, even my son, when we realized what my daughter had, because she had mono Epstein-Barr virus the last 5 weeks of her life, and that also I've learned came from the animal viruses and the vaccines from one of our researchers, but that compromised her immune system to allow a secondary infection, bacterial meningitis, to kick in when I brought her to the emergency room, and she ended up passing away from that. But they said, get your son to the hospital as soon as possible because it's a very deadly disease. And my brother was watching him, and I had Shane bring him over. And I remember they asked, is he up to date on his vaccines? And I just, by this time, learned just to shake my head, yes. So they take his blood and his urine, two nurses, I'll never forget it. And then they came back out and they said, not only does he not have mono or bacterial meningitis, but we've never seen purer blood in a little boy. They could literally see his pure blood with no vaccinations. It was, just unbelievable. And he was literally drinking her bottle because she was in bottling her diapers till the day she passed. So he was literally drinking her bottle the night before, playing with her all the time because he wasn't vaccinated. He just always, prevented her from going into the realm of autism. You know, she couldn't become autistic because Corey wouldn't let her.
But, you know, this is the kind of study that we need to see. You know, we need to get these kids who aren't vaccinated, and we need to look at, you know, what are the differences? How do we, you know, how are we able to monitor? What are we looking at here? And so, you know, urine is an example, but blood is certainly another example. And we could even, you know, start testing their hair. We could look at what are the mineral components of a child who's not been vaccinated and a child who has been. You know, how is their body working? How are they developing? Are they meeting their normal growth and development landmarks? And so, you know, unless we have these studies, we'll never be able to know completely. And we can do them. I think we're in a time right now because we've had parents who've chosen not to vaccinate. We've got a number of families and kids who would actually be, you know, would be really good candidates to just follow, you know, and see how do they do? How do they, you know, how does their learning develop? How does their, you know, how are their social skills? What are, you know, what's happening with these kids? Are they getting sick, you know, and comparing them to kids who have been vaccinated? And, you know, what are the differences? Because we, you know, the more numbers that we have to present to the public, the more that parents are going to be able to make the choices that are going to be supportive for their kids.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Thompson. That all that they have to do is do a unvaccinated population versus a vaccinated, and show the whole world that the unvaccinated are actually sicker than the vaccinated population.
Other way around. Yeah. The vaccinated are sicker than the unvaccinated. Yeah. And they're never going to allow that. The drug companies are never going to allow that because, of course, they're making cha-chings on the vaccinations. But it'd be great for, you know, us to be able to do that, to show undoubtedly that the vaccinated children are so much healthier. Even Dr. Meyer Eisenstein, before he passed away, we used to have a video on our website from him. He was a family practitioner, I believe, in Chicago, and he had a video that said, with all of his unvaccinated patients, no vaccines, no autism, no vaccines, no cancer.
Interesting.
Yep. So, the body knows what to do. It's got to leave it alone.
Right. There was one study that was done with, it was the Amish population. Mm-hmm. And so they were looking at those kids, and all they looked at was their cases or numbers of cases of allergies. And they found that with the Amish kids, and more so with the kids who were working on the farms, who were milking the cows and, you know, making the cheese and all of these things, that those kids had, pretty much no cases of allergies.
That's right. The only ones, it was Dan Umstead that did that, and the only ones that he found in the Amish community, and this is way back when, because now the Amish are vaccinating. We actually go to Pennsylvania at least twice a year with our scanners, and now they're vaccinating. The drug companies have infiltrated them, but back then they did not. But the only ones that he found that had autism even was the ones that was adopted in. So they had their vaccines.
right. I didn't realize that was starting in the Amish community. I thought that they had stayed pretty strict in their no interventions.
No, they're not even using organic foods as much. We can't. It's very difficult to even find Amish organic farmers. They've definitely infiltrated the Amish community, so we can't promote them anymore as being great, healthy children. Only the victims, only, you know, people like myself. I have two unvaccinated children, my son Corey, as I mentioned, and then I got pregnant 5 months after Casey passed with my 18-year-old daughter now. Her name is Faith, and she has no vaccines. She was even home birthed. Our bodies know how to have babies, just like our breasts know how to feed them. And unbelievable immune systems they were created with.
God bless. And so, you know, I've seen this in a lot of families who are homesteading and they're, you know, out there just living on the land, and that these kids who are exposed to just the natural world, that they are strong, their immune systems are strong, they're in good shape, they're, you know, helping out, doing chores around the house and taking care of the things that, you know, you need to. And it's people who are choosing to basically take responsibility for their lives and doing something different than what's being marketed to them. You know, those are the families that are staying pretty strong. Those are the families, the kids that are growing up really strong as well. So I'm glad to hear that your other kids are doing really, really well.
Yeah, dirt don't hurt. Reverend Malcolmus of Hallelujah Acres, he's the one that did a whole presentation on dirt not hurting, that it actually builds your immune system. These, you know, this bacteria and stuff, our bodies are designed to strengthen our immune system. I mean, even chicken pox and these mild diseases that are not deadly by no means, they give you immunity for a lifetime. You know, they strengthen the immune system so that you don't get cancer, you know?
Right.
So it's just such misinformation out there. So I'll definitely get you these cards so that you can just, you know, kind of like, you know, not have to do it yourself and just give them the card to look into truth if they choose.
Yeah.
You know, because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, because people just, it's easier even with me back then. It was just easier to trust my immunologist pediatrician who told me Casey would die if I didn't vaccinate her. You know, they sound smart. They talk this fancy, Gary calls it techno jargon, doctrinese. And we think they're smart, and we give in to that fear that they, you know, they give to us to poison our babies.
Right. I mean, it's unfortunate that they're not doing more informed consent. And, you know, that's where there is currently a group of medical doctors that are pushing for this because, you know, California is you know, the state currently that's getting a lot of people active on both sides, right, because they've made vaccinations mandatory. And there are a lot of doctors that feel that that's not the right option for some families. You know, in cases where if there are, you know, let's say three kids in the family and the first kid had some reactions from vaccines, that maybe, you know, there might be something genetic that's happening in that family. And if the other kids, you know, if the parents don't want to vaccinate the other kids, then that should be their choice because they are a family that's at higher risk. And doctors are not being allowed to give exempt forms for those families, for those children. And there's a whole group of physicians for informed consent that's forming, and a lot of docs out of California, because they want to see the research that vaccines are safe. You know, they want that. And it was the ICANN group, the Informed Consent Action Network, with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree, that they put it in that information for public, or request for public information, requesting to see all those studies that were done, because that was part of what was, you know, the deal that they worked out back in 1986, right, as far as the National Childhood Vaccine Information, right, Act. And so they were looking for these research studies. Where are the research studies showing that these vaccines are safe? And CDC was not able to supply any research studies.
That's right.
And so if that was the case, then what are we doing? You know, if there's no information to show that vaccines are safe, then why do we keep giving these things?
Yeah, we're just creating Sickness Incorporated, because that's, they're going to be going in for antibiotics, they're going to be going in for ear tubes, and, you know, eventually being treated with chemotherapy and radiation with cancer. You know, so to them, it's dollar signs. I've learned, you know, that's their God is the love of money, the root of all evil. And, you know, we're supposed to have power, love, and a sound mind, and trust in the body's innate ability to heal on its own. And that's why I just really appreciate what you're doing, because, you know, is predominantly the people that you help, are predominantly them, are they not vaccinated mostly, or is it mostly vaccinated children?
Nope, it's completely across the board. I've got everybody. Yeah.
So half and half. Wow. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, I've got the ones who are partially vaccinating, the ones who are, you know, not vaccinating, or fully vaccinating. And you know, I want to help the parents. I want to help these families. I want to keep these kids in as good a shape as possible. And so we figure out how are we going to work with this, because, you know, there are a lot of factors involved in vaccinating. You know, they're potentially going to come across problems at schools, or, you know, in playgrounds with different kids, or even in their own families, because it's such a charged, emotionally charged issue. And if, you know, if we could just look at the numbers, if we could look at the research, if we could look at the ingredients and understand how the body works, I think that we could have people asking for more research from the drug companies, asking for, you know, true safety studies being done. And, you know, once we have that, we might be looking at a really different landscape in terms of medical care for kids.
Yeah, the drug companies are never going to, you know, this big money for them, the vaccinations and the Sickness Incorporated, like I said. I wanted to tell you, too, we're in Florida. Where are you, in South Florida, Miami?
I am. I'm in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. So,
awesome.
And Delray, from time to time, I head up there as well, because I've got some folks that have questions up that way. So
wonderful. We definitely should connect for lunch or something. We actually lived in Delray for years. My children I shared them with their dad in Davie, which is Fort Lauderdale. And we're in Tampa right now, but we're heading south soon. So let's definitely connect after the show. We just thank you. We thank you for what you're doing, sweetheart.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'll be doing a talk at the end of this month at the Palms Birth House in Delray. So getting some families together who have questions, because you know, I'm noticing now I have many, many questions with people from all backgrounds, from all cultures, you know, speaking different languages everywhere. And they're coming in and they want to know. They will have questions. So I'll be doing a talk there on the last Saturday of this month. I believe it's the 26th.
I will definitely look into that information because we should be in town. I'm going to help my daughter buy her first car that she wants to do independently by herself, Miss, you know, independent here. So let's definitely, you know, get together if we can. And I just thank you dearly for taking the time out today and let Dr. Eli know if she'd like to be on next week. We have that open still or in the next couple of weeks. And just thank you is all I can say.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for doing all the good work that you're doing and for, you know, getting the resources out there. The more that we can tell parents that they've got choices, that they've got options, they, you know, just need to get informed, you know, the more that I really feel we're helping these kids one at a time.
Absolutely. Thank you for being a voice for the voiceless. And we'll get a package of cards out to you, too. So we'll get your address where you want them sent to, okay?
Okay, fantastic. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, April. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
And please forgive me. I didn't catch your husband's name.
Gary.
It was nice to meet you, Judith.
Okay, you're listening to Vic Fellowship, and our shows can be accessed on the front page of our VacInfo.org website on the belly of a little boy flexing his muscles. We're on every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern, and our contact number is 800-939-8227. Again, if you have any questions about today's show, just call the voicemail line 862-800-6805 and leave your name, your question, and let them know it's for our What in the Cell is Going On show. We thank Progressive Radio Network for allowing us to give you this uncompromised truth, and y'all bless.